creators of the podcast dungeon, you have come across another goddamn horror podcast with Graham Fay, Jonas Barnes, and Ryan Danley.
Welcome, everybody, to yet another goddamn horror podcast. I am one of your hosts. I am Ryan Danley, coming to you from Portland, Oregon. I don't even want to talk about the weather. It's just like spring, gross, wet, muddy weather. It's Portland, Oregon. What do you want? I do the same shit. Like, I talk about the weather every time we enter the show, but I do like the same shit every single time. Like, I go,
Portland doesn't change, that's why,
right? Like, I'm not gonna not go to a food cart because it's raining. that's just not the Portland way. And Portlanders, the world might not know this, but Portlanders refuse to use umbrellas, and it is just
good.
It's a thing, it's a whole thing.
Good, yeah. I love it. I wish they did that shit here.
Yeah, it's just like, it's just a thing.
So etiquette is terrible in New York City.
Well, the thing is like an umbrella makes any situation where there's more people terrible. You know what I mean? Terrible. So utterly like fuck umbrellas. It's like they're wet. They fucking, I'm anti-umbrella. I'm anti-umbrella. Anyways.
Me too.
I think since our last trip, I went to Sacramento and did comedy. That was pretty fun. Check me out on
Fuck yeah, you did.
Jesse Riviera. Yeah, I did an evening at the Sacramento Punchline with a friend of the show, Johnny Taylor, on his show, and that was fun. I did a show in Marysville, Washington, which is like 45 minutes north of Seattle. Drove to Sacramento that night. Did comedy in Sacramento and then drove back to Portland and did comedy in Portland the next night. So that was essentially the entire, I should have just gone to Canada. I should have just, you
the
know
fact
what I mean?
The fact that you Might don't as do well. Cocaine anymore makes that even more astounding.
I know. It's just, the good thing is I did enough cocaine that 14 years later I'm still like, you know, I think I still got that kick. Anyways, these are my other co-hosts, Graham and and Flatbush.
I watched a movie earlier this weekend and that Jonas recommended, and then I made him give me 7 Blu-rays to make up for it.
Oh yeah.
No, but shout out to Jonas for giving me a bunch of really dope Blu-rays. I saw him on Sunday, was it? Or Monday?
Yeah, it was Sunday. No, it was Sunday.
Yeah.
I saw you both. I saw you both on Sunday and Monday. You just didn't see me. Cause
that's weird.
Fucking. Yeah, because I'm a fucking, I stalk my co-hosts. How's Bushwick, Jonas?
Good, man. I got a new camera, so that's nice. So you guys can actually see my face better now.
Yeah, thank God.
That's remember, good. Now I'm not just a
floating head.
Right. I remember when the good years of this podcast, when you just were in the dark, and we didn't have to look at you. Anyways, let's introduce our amazing guest that we have. I'm super amped. I've been suggesting them in the recommendation part about this on this podcast for a minute. I fell in love and fully geeked their entire catalog recently, and reached out to their lead singer. We're talking about Dead Pioneers. Really, really fabulous band. I'm really, really into them. Strongly suggest if you haven't listened to them to go listen to them. And we have a lead vocalist, Greg Deal, with us. How's it going, man?
Hi. Happy to be here.
We're stoked to have you, man. Ryan recommended this, Dead Pioneers, and it floored me. First notes, the hit. And then from there to the fucking last song, absolutely fucking perfect and brilliant and just so filled with so much raw energy and just the music and everything is fucking perfect. So I'm going to probably continually do this throughout the interview, but thank you. And because that shit rules.
I sincerely appreciate it. As I think a lot of people do, I oftentimes married my opposite. My wife, was in sports, had district records in hurdles in Virginia, like Northern Virginia, Washington, D.C., and had two superlatives, finishing his high school class clown and most athletic. And she married a high school dropout who snowboarded and skateboarded once and dresses basically the same now as I did in high school, and is constantly asking me, like, what the hell are you doing?
Well, I mean, like,
no business.
Well, you are, but you're doing it, and you, I'm going to ask you to describe Dead Pioneers. I have my own description of it, but I want you to describe it. Like, how, if somebody hadn't heard them, what would you describe it as?
I mean, I think the shorthand's probably like sort of an indigenous punk. I don't know, punk is also just so, and I love punk and that is absolutely my origin. But I also love music just in general. And so I don't necessarily want to close it in. And I think, bands like Idols are doing a really good job showing that you can go hard and you can have, you can have your hard songs and allowing the emotion to come through and then allowing them to even progress to something else. So I think our second album is probably going to follow the same formula as the first one, but who knows? I'd like to kind of explore that and see where that goes without turning into Green Day. Although, I'd be lucky. Green Day. They got money in their pockets. So.
Right. I'll give a little hand to Green Day. Like, at least they're still singing like songs about stuff. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't, growing up in Colorado for me, we ended up seeing a lot of Southern California bands. I mean, Green Day's from Berkeley, but we saw the Offspring a lot. And like at some point, the Offspring, their really early records, like, kind of had something to say. I wouldn't necessarily qualify them as having something to say anymore. No disrespect to them. I just think the music shifted. Like, I think if you take like Green Day, I feel like they're still pretty consistent. And at one point we're kind of the only band, like, I'm not like even like a Green Day stan, but they were the only band like saying something that wasn't Rage Against the Machine. You know what I mean? Like, that's like all of these terrible things were happening and they were like, is anybody like, I don't know. It's just, it seems like music at one point, was a voice of rebellion and protest. And it seems like, I mean, I hate to be an old man, but like it just doesn't seem like we get that from that anymore. It just seems like the you know what I mean? And like, I'm not a classic rock fan, but at least like half those bands were like, we're going to sing songs about like, what people are feeling and stuff like that. And I don't really feel like that's anymore. So like, I still give it up to Green Day a little bit, because at least they were coming out with American Idiot and stuff like that at a time that like, it really felt like we needed more bands like using their stage to like point out like bullshit that was going on. And I think one of the greatest things about your band and you specifically is that it's so unabashedly, it's couldn't be any clearer what you're trying to say. And it is an amazing message that I think that has gotten lost in the world. And it's, I got to tell you, like hearing indigenous voices, like like loud and like, this is what I am. And this is what I am. Because, you know, still we get so much, like as a white guy, 90% of my indigenous information is told through white people's stories. And, you know, so when we hear like actual like indigenous people, like living lives as human beings, not as caricatures, like, and then you talk about like, I'm this, like your song, like Bad Indian is a great, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's such a crucial and important song, I think, for people to live. So I just really want to like, you know, like what an amazing thing you're doing, as in like using that. And it is so well written and it is so powerful, and you know, and really thank you.
And seamlessly, yeah, through the spoken word and the songs and everything, it's all bright, clear, and just so, I don't know, it's very emotional and great, and I just love to see that shit.
I sincerely appreciate it. You know, honestly, the entire thing happened by accident. If you can believe that, I mean, if you dig the rabbit hole deep enough, you'll find out that I've got, you know, a decent visual art career that I've been doing, you know, for nearly 20 years. And I've done, you know, murals and paintings and conceptual work and video and, you know, and performance artwork. And I had a performance art piece called The Punk Pan-Indian Romantic Comedy. It was mostly just spoken word, a series of vignettes that I was doing, talking about how I grew up and growing up in Park City, Utah, and, you know, the music scene that was in Salt Lake City, which was mostly hardcore straight edge, you know, in the late 80s and early 90s. And, but also how important music was growing up. And I got a grant expanded and to like make original music for the segues between each vignette, each spoken word piece. And then in that process just ended up writing and ended up accidentally putting something together. So that entire record was written in about 8 or 10 hours. We had 3 days, and at the end of the first day I had tested positive for COVID. And so we had to stop, and then we recorded, we took what we had and we recorded 1 day, 2 days, sorry, in the blasting room, which is of course,
oh shit,
Bill Stevenson of the Descendants owns that. It's up in Fort Collins, and we have connections, up into that space. And we did it in 2 days. One of the songs, No One Owns Anything and Death Is Real, is the last track, on the record. I brought in, and when our engineer went to lunch for an hour, we, like, there was just three of us in there, and we just hashed it out. I was like, this is what it sounds like, this is what it is. We hashed it out, and by the time he came back, I was like, we're gonna record this really quick, and we just kind of threw it in last minute. But it was the one song I wanted to have a hand in everything, so we wrote I wrote the lyrics, I figured out the drum line, I figured out the riffs, and then I gave them to one of my guitarists to kind of flush everything out. And my drummer, you know, he's just kind of incredible anyways, and so he flushed everything out there. And the engineer, his name's Chris Beeble, who helped co-produce as well, is also a bassist, and he was like, can I do the bass line for that, because I hadn't worked that part out. And so he literally just like broke out a bass and just like recorded on the spot. But that entire record, that's three solid days for that entire record.
Wow. Wow.
So it's just, and that last song is the fucking banger. That's not in the video. It's fucking so great. It's like, that's so cool.
So like,
yeah, we're getting into the, we're getting into the second record, we're trying to like be very conscious of the fact of the situation of the first one, and to try to like give ourselves more room, but also limit ourselves, follow the same sort of formula in terms of making something we want to make, but also maybe giving ourselves a little bit of pressure. So we have to get it done. So we're trying to mimic the similar situation, I think, for a second record when we get there.
Yeah, sometimes more doesn't equal better. I mean, like, you know, as a stand-up comic, as one of the stand-up comics on this show, I know that when I have to be tighter, like when I have a shorter amount of time to get what I need done, like I have to just, it just puts that pressure on it. And I think like sometimes artists, like, because I think people like to think that we're free, I talk about this a lot, like free spirits and this and that, but I think we're actually kind of really unhappy and really like, you know, like anxiously pushed driven towards something. And sometimes that, I think that that pressure, the external pressure that matches it, you know what I mean? And like, and then we end up being like, okay, we got to bust this out. So I'm just going to like really like focus in and, you know, and it's like, you know, if I go do a 3 minute set, like a 3 minute open mic set, like I'm generally better than something 5 minutes, because I don't have any time to screw around. If there's, it's just like boom, 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 you know. And so it's yeah, so I can understand wanting to be like, you know what, yeah, we could do more, we'll probably have some more opportunity, but fuck it, let's just bang it out, you know what I mean? So
yeah, 100%. If I'm painting, if I have too long, or if I sit around on it too long, I inevitably end up ruining it. Like if I sit, like the more time doesn't always, like you need to know when to stop, because you, as an artist, you can just sit there and think, this could be better, this could be better, I can do this, what about this idea, and then it just gets convoluted, which your record is not. It's sparse and crisp and like right to the point and razor sharp,
zero fat.
Yeah.
So you grow up in music and interested in that, and you get into like visual art and like graffiti, things like that, or just like mural arts, things that, yeah. And you are you just what I call an art monster? Are you just somebody who just does it, like does it all? Like, are you going to act at some point? Are you going to, do you see clay and go like, I can sculpt this? Are you kind
of, I bet he's already acted.
I mean, maybe I, my wife has pointed out that I've made a career of doing shit that I probably have no business doing. I tend to think everything in my head, and I understand the process, and I understand how that works. And so, you know, if I can conceive of it, then, you know, I feel like I can do it. And that's generally how it tends to work. So yeah. I mean, the first time I had that experience, I was young and I wanted to do graffiti. I was in Portland. I was actually at Fred Meyer. I don't know if that's still there. There was an underground parking lot.
Yep.
And it had free walls. You could just go in there and you could paint whatever. So you go upstairs, you get your Krylon, you go downstairs and paint whatever. And I was dating a girl at the time. This was when I was about probably 18 or 19. And she just straight up was like, what are you doing? You're wasting money. You can't do this. And we were up there for my best friend. Her name was Erin. And she was the one who suggested all these things, and she trusted and believed. She showed me where to go, what to do. And the first thing I busted out was exactly what I had envisioned, exactly what I had drawn out ahead of time. And so, yeah, I mean, I have a whole career based on that, but it helps to surround yourself with good people. I mean, I can write all day long, but if I don't have good musicians around me, then, you know, it doesn't amount to shit, you know? Sure. So I think that's a big part of it, as well as being enabled, surrounding myself with enablers.
Yeah. Everybody tells you they're bad. Everybody tells you you're bad. Listen,
good enablers are the best thing.
Right.
If you have people around you that make you do cool shit, those are the best kinds of enablers.
So,
yeah,
how did the band come together? Did you just, do you come to the idea of like, okay, this is what we're going to do. It's going to be like mostly indigenous focused, with like a sort of like, you know, with like that sort of kind of like driving vibe to it? Or do you just, or were you guys like, I'm going to start a band, and then it built from there?
Yeah. No, it started with me. I'm the voice, I'm the writer. Performance art is sort of in my quiver of mediums that I use. Mm-hmm. And I put together, usually it's about presence, and I have like outfits and things that I wear, taking up space, like with my body, with my voice, with sound, with, you know, whatever. But I'd done a new piece. It was just a spoken word piece. It was about an hour long. It was called The Punk Pan-Indian Romantic Comedy. And essentially just talked about how I grew up, and my music was really important to my father and to my mother. My father coming from sort of the hippie side of things, mother coming from more pop. And it was always playing. Something was always playing. And so when I found my way, you know, growing up as a an indigenous kid in Park City, Utah, which is a small town where my parents made just enough money for us to be broke around rich white people in a ski resort town. I found things to gravitate towards, and it was skateboarding. And then, you know, you see the videos and it's the music. And so all that punk music really just spoke to me. And then discovering that there's a whole scene in Salt Lake City, and really sort of enveloping myself into that. And then music just was always important in that space and throughout my life. And so I talk about that and talk about my father who passed away several years ago, and talk about my best friend in high school who had a heart condition. He died at a Rage Against the Machine show. He had a heart attack. And shit. All this sort of tumultuous, and some of it's funny and some of it's sad. And but I had received a grant to expand it and to add original music to the transitions, to the segues between each of the vignettes. And so I hooked up with a couple of guys at a place called the Music District in Fort Collins. And one was a guitarist, one was a drummer, and this is right smack dab in the middle of the pandemic. It was the spring 2020, and we're trying to do stuff remotely. And I know enough about music to understand things, but having a really hard time pulling the trigger on a lot of stuff and just really trepidation going into it. But these guys were great, and they're great at their craft. Shane and Josh were the two guys. In 2021, I got a residency at a place in Florida where I was a mentor to six other visual artists. And then there was a musician who was a mentor to six musicians, and a poet that was a mentor to six poets. And one of the six musicians that was there, his name is Lee Tesh. And Lee is the lead guitarist for a post-punk industrial gospel band called Algiers, out of Atlanta, Georgia. And we met, like, we didn't even talk, because we would all have, there were so many of us, and it's this huge campus, and we would all eat lunch and dinner and breakfast together. And we didn't even talk until the second week, and we sat down and we just started talking, and he had expressed interest in what I do, knowing who I was. And of course I found out who he was, and their band is so unique and kick-ass and just polished. And he was like, we should do something together. And I said, oh, you know, I'm working on this thing. And and I explained this idea of creating original music, but that it was seeming to progress into a place of like something like spoken word with punk riffs, and, you know, instead of ambient music or jazz, like we do punk riffs and it has execution attached to it. And I'm thinking of Henry Rollins and Rollins Band, and I'm thinking of Jello Biafra, and I'm thinking of Suicidal Tendencies and the Minutemen and all these different bands that use some spoken word. And I shared with him something I had written literally the night before in about an hour. And it was this spoken word piece called Bad Indian. And he's like, cool. And, you know, a couple of days go by, we work through some things. We go into the recording studio, we pull one of the other musicians in, and he plays the drums on this really shitty old, you know, drum kit, and Lee's on a bass with a heavy, heavy distortion. And we figure out how to execute, like how I'm going to work it, and what that bass riff is going to be. And the drums sound great. And we set everything up, set up microphones, went through it a couple times, pressed record, and that's Bad Indian. The single, the original single that's on our Spotify and everything else, is 6 minute long Bad Indian. We did in less than 2 hours. And wow. And I was like, that's it. And I sent it to Shane, and I sent it to Josh, and I said, this is what it is. Because we got into a room together with somebody, and Lee really helped pull it all together. And so now Lee's in the band. And so now it's us. And we're like, okay, this feels like a thing. And I raised money to get everything together. And we tried. And it took a long time. And it was really difficult. And I raised enough money for us to get in the same room together for about 3 days so we could write and flush out songs. And then get into the blasting room for 2 days and record. And then I got COVID and we had to push everything off. And everything just kept moving and shifting. And so we finally hit January last year, 2023, We're going to the blasting room. Lee's in town because he's there with Algiers, and he's going to stay behind and record. Josh is flying into town. Shane is already there. And Lee, I don't know what happened. I think there was a family emergency or something. He went home. And then Josh had a death in the family, so he couldn't come. So now it's just me and Shane. And I'm like, man, we can't keep pushing this off. Do you know another guitarist that can maybe fill this in? Lee said he can mail in his bass riffs, and we can just drop them in. And so Shane makes some calls and brings in this guy, Abe Brennan. And like, he's related to Henry Rollins. Black t-shirt, black pants, boots, you know, clean cut, and looks intense as hell. And I loved him immediately. And he's like, you know, Josh is like a fine-tuned instrument, and Abe is a freaking sledgehammer, man. He just, yeah, and sledgehammers can be precise too. And so he comes in and he fills in, and we knocked everything out in 2 days. And while we were doing that, I'm talking to Shane, like whispering, like, he's really good. Like, maybe he should be in the band. And I'm texting the other two guys, Shane and our Josh and Lee. I'm like, he's awesome. Like, we should ask him to be in the band. And so while we're recording, I'm like, you want to be in the band? And he's like, sure. And at this point, we're like, yeah, we're recording, but like, who knows what it is. And,
sure.
And if it turns out. And so Abe joins our ranks, and we got everything out. So we released everything September last year. So we were sitting on it for a minute, and yeah, like less than 5 months later, here we are. That was a really long answer to your question.
No. It was great. I freaking perfect. Loved it. It's, yeah. I loved it. And I love like band origin stories like that. And especially like with what you're doing, you know what I mean? You're like, okay, like I'm a spoken word person, and we're going to start there and work backwards from that. And I love the way this worked out. And I love that. And I love a story about like a bad recording session that they just like, somebody needs to show up, and then it just really works out. That's just like, there's just nothing better in music and art in general, because like art is never goes as planned, you know what I mean? And so like to be able to like do that is wild. So the reception's clearly been pretty strong, you know what I mean? Like, it seems like you're getting a lot of love out there. It seems like there's a lot of following and like a lot of like are you opening for local for bands touring and things like that? Are you getting attention from those sorts of people? Or
yeah, we've had 4 live performances, which means we practiced 4 times. The songs are set up to be pretty tight, so sure. most of them follow my lead, and so we're not on a timing track or anything. So we're actually pretty tight on that end. But like, you know, obviously I need to make sure that my performances are a little more on point. Everybody knows what they're doing. I heard we may be in the run for opening for Punk and Drublick this summer. Haven't heard it confirmed yet, but we're supposed to be doing that. A couple local bands. We did a festival last summer called UMS here in Denver. And we've got some other stuff lined up to go. And I mean, the last, not to humble brag, but the last show we did, which was several weeks ago, Jello Biafra showed up because he was in town for the holidays. And so, you know, you get a little nod and a shake, and, you know, he's a good guy. It's a great story too. And I can do his voice. He's Jello's a lot. I love Jello. He's a lot.
Well, I mean, I think if he wasn't as much as he is, they would have never been who they are. You know what I mean? I think like you,
absolutely.
Like he's the type of guy that you need to contain, like, and he needs to be, and that bursting at the edges thing is that so good, such good energy, like for recording and things like that, like reeling in, like you know, like I'm a stand-up, not a improv guy. You know what I mean? Like, improv guys are all about that, like, Jello Biafra energy. You know what I mean? They're all like, oh, like, you know what I mean? Like, so I'm always kind of like, it's, what the hell else would Jello Biafra be doing with his life? You know what I mean? If he didn't have this,
So he didn't have him.
Jello jar for real estate. No, he, he's a fire hose, man. A lot of power that sometimes you gotta be careful. If you're not holding that down, it's gonna sure. go all over the place. But
he's gotta make sure you there, point him at the fire.
It was totally. He was awesome. It was just really funny because when we first got our vinyl in, I mailed it out to a couple spots, not really thinking that it would really get anywhere, but it's like, you know, maybe we get support and we can do a second record or something like that. And I sent something over to Alternative Tentacles. And so he had heard about me from two or three friends locally that know him. And he showed up to the show. And after the show, he came up and he's like, "Greg." He's like, "It's nice to meet you. I got your record." He said, I looked at the address and it said Peyton, Colorado. And I was like, "Where the fuck is Peyton?" And he's like, "I took it out of the box." And he's like, "I saw your front cover." And I was like, "Holy shit, that's an amazing cover." And I took it out of the sleeve and I saw your logo. And I was like, "That's an awesome fucking logo." And I put it on, and I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And he just on and on and on. And I was like, "Man, that's really, really awesome." And so we've been talking off and on since. And he's a sweetheart. I actually really like him, and talking to him is a kick. So
that dude's a fucking legend.
Yeah, I mean, no, he's the genuine article, and so that's a. I don't know. For me, like, I'd feel pretty good, like, having him walk up, especially like, because at some point he's probably like, "Oh, I've heard so much shit." You know what I mean? And like, I've been doing this for so long, and I've heard every band who thinks they have a point and blah 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 blah. And but he's right, you know what I mean? Like, you're the real deal, and I can understand, because I gotta tell you, when you listen to you, and I mean, we're just gonna keep saying nice shit to you, so just buckle in. But when I listen,
what this is now,
yeah. But when I listen to you, like, the first time, I was like, "Wow, this is really, like, it does what it needs to do," which is like, it drives it home to the point. And it is really like to do with like you and what you're saying and the matter of factness of it. And also like your tendency to almost have that Jello Biafra sort of like, I'm being held back at this point, like, you can feel it. It's got that gravity, and it's pretty fucking cool. So I am glad scene legends are giving you the fucking love you clearly deserve, because that's not always the case. So
And I see the influence from Dead Kennedys and Minutemen and stuff, and also like, you've got this sort of punk thing where you're almost an outsider musically, just because it doesn't quite fit, you know, which is like, it reminds me a lot of like Single Mothers, early Single Mothers, and Drug Church too. Like, all those bands just have that like weird energy almost about them that's like captivating. And that's like, you're an incredible, I just love the God, that fucking last song too. Death is Real, so fucking incredible.
Yeah. I gotta tell you that last song, No One Owns Anything and Death is Real is a takeoff of a Kyle Kinane joke.
Fuck right. That's awesome.
we had Kyle
on the show. I know Kyle well. That's awesome. It's perfect. A punk guy himself. You know what I mean? So
I'm sure Kyle would fucking love that. Actually.
Yeah, I will actually let him know.
I love Kyle Kinane, all time favorite comedian for sure. Like his cadence, his meter, his delivery, it is right up my alley. And that joke that he tells where he's talking about how all of his peers are like owning, and it's like the last, you know, the last thing of the American dream is to own, and that, like, you know, I don't know whose dream it is, but it's someone's dream. And you know, it's so funny, but it's so dark. And so when I wrote that song, that was the genesis was just like, no one knows anything and death is real. And I remember like my oldest kid, Sage, who's 17 and going to be graduating here soon, but has been on quite a few different journeys with me, you know, music and art and everything else. But they were like, they're like, that's really dark, Dad. And I'm just like, but it's not supposed to be. Like, it's meant to be funny. And then writing is just such a weird thing. Like, you can go in with an agenda, but if you actually let go enough, your agenda is going to probably go out the window, and you're going to write, you know, what comes out. And so it's really an environmental song somehow, but it really did start with, you know, Kyle Kinane's joke of like telling somebody that, you know, no one knows, no one really owns anything, and, you know, death is real. And yeah, that was where it started. So,
so cool.
I'll let him know that later. Yeah, we could talk to you all day about your band and what it is, and I'm really excited for things that are coming up. What you got? Any news? Anything we can hope for? New album? New anything?
We're in the middle of negotiations for a record contract. Not much I can talk about other than that. Like. Really excited at the possibility of having support for a second record. We will be looking at some representation overseas in the UK and in Germany, which are two spots that we're getting a lot of love, especially Germany. We somehow landed on a podcast that is the most popular podcast in Germany, which sounds really strange to me. I mean, I know podcasts are popular, but the most popular podcast sounds really strange. The host of whom I was told is the John Stewart of Germany. I don't know if that means what they think it means, but somebody sent him an email about Dead Pioneers, and he listened to it and he loved it, and he started talking about it on his podcast. And so we just passed on Spotify over 500,000 streams, and the last month we've been getting a huge push out of Germany, which is kind of crazy, especially because in a place like Germany, you know, the indigenous stereotype lives strong. They are obsessed with the West and this relic image, and I'm really excited to have the opportunity to go over there and hurt some German feelings about what things really are. So yeah, things are coming, things are happening, and my hope is that whatever we do in Europe, that we're able to find quarter here in the United States as well. But, you know, we'll see what happens. So if that happens, we'll probably be looking at another record next year sometime, I imagine. And we're already writing. We've already been writing.
Awesome. We actually are a pretty decent sized podcast in Germany as well. So believe it
or not,
the Germans do like us.
Not the most popular.
Not the most popular, but maybe we should be. Do you find that punk and skateboarding and art and everything has a direct correlation to horror movies? Like there's an even.
I mean, sure. I mean, I like the Misfits, and there's a horror line there.
Sure,
especially with the old classic stuff. And I think there, you know, there's some metal that does that. I mean, I think there's a natural progression of going, you know, from punk to new wave. But I think there's also a natural progression to go from punk to something harder.
Sure.
And yeah, those things I think live in harmony.
Yes, that's it. I've just always felt like, you know, it's like almost every like person I know who grew up like skateboarding and things like that also likes horror. And I don't know, I mean, that could be a little nurture, it could be a little nature. I don't know if it's just the communities support each other or what it is about it, or the idea of like counterculture like sort of like bleeds into it. But I've just always been it's just something I've always noticed, that like pretty much like every punk I know is super into horror as well. It's just kind of like the way it is.
There's a lot of punks making indie horror right now.
Yeah, so
horror also is a genre, as a subgenre of film, and a genre of film is also kind of like the punk genre. Like, it's the one that's the underground. It's the one that kind of like takes the chances and, like, you know, does what
it also can. Might be the one that has the biggest like umbrella of like what can come under it. Like you say punk, there's a billion different sounding bands
that can be labeled as
punk. And with horror, that's the same. Like I consider horror the dominant genre, not a subgenre of film. Like it's the genre as far as I'm concerned. But even
we also have another goddamn horror ridiculousness. Podcast. I mean,
well, sure, but even without my ridiculousness, it's still one of the only genres, and maybe the only one that can intake any other genre. Like you can make a horror anything type of movie, and punk pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I agree with them. I loved it because I mentioned to you to what kind of movie you want to talk about, and you immediately said Event Horizon, and Event Horizon is like, so I am I'm one of the few people, and I think even on this podcast, that out of the what I would consider the three best sci-fi horror movies, which would be Alien, the original one, The Thing. I actually like Event Horizon the best out of all of them because I think it's the most horror, you know.
Sure.
What's the temperature in the room on those three?
It becomes the most horror for sure.
Yeah.
Like it's Event Horizon is one of those movies also that kind of bait and switches you because it starts off as like, you know, like, okay, I'm in for a sci-fi one. I'm in for like a little bit of a sci-fi thriller, blah, blah, blah. But like the way that it builds the tension, and then once it finally hits that horror note, it's like, oh fuck, I'm in a horror movie. Like, right. And it turns up to 1,000.
Like a really rough one too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not just like it does not ease you into it. You're just like, oh fuck, we're here. Like,
yeah,
yeah.
That movie's so good. I Alien is my favorite. I think, and always like, there's just. Nothing beats that to me. Ripley and fucking just the claustrophobia that's built in that movie in space is so cool to me. I love that. Like when you're like in a ship, but like, and you're close to people, but you're like, you're in the middle of nowhere. Like, I love that shit. So yeah, I would go, but fucking yeah. Event Horizon. I mean, I have a poster of Event Horizon on my wall and, I just ordered that blue K or the Blu-ray thing, whatever. What was it? It was Steelbook? A special. Yeah,
the new Steelbook
is coming out. Yeah, you convinced me to get that. So
I have multiple copies of the movie, so I can't talk any.
Yeah, I have a bunch of Alien, but yeah, this event, I don't even think I have Event Horizon. I came back and looked. I was like, oh shit, I'm getting that. So, yeah, but Sam,
that movie terrified that movie? Me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, space hell. Yeah, terrible. Yeah. Like Earth hell.
But maybe not that. Enough, like, I'm old enough that I'm like realizing how terrifying like the ocean is and how terrifying space is. Like, people are just itching to go to space. I'm like, why? Like,
yeah,
there's no oxygen up there. Like, it's insane. Right. But like, yeah, Event Horizon. I saw. In my early 20s, in a dark room with my roommate, and we had I love sci-fi. I just love sci-fi, straight up. And so we're watching it, and I'm just like, oh no, like what is this? And I've never seen it since. It jarred me so much that I was like, I don't know if I can ever watch this again. Like, but after this conversation, I might have to dip my toes back in and see Eyeless Partners going after Sam Neill.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, and it's a lot also like another great, it's got like a little of that Hellraiser vibe to it. And I think that like that time period, Hellraiser was, you know, when the first is particularly the first two, I'm a huge fan of Hellraiser 2. When those movies came out, they were like sort of like, they were like such a breath of fresh air, because as much as like I love like Nightmare on Elm Street and I love Friday the 13th, like the Hellraiser movies kind of came out and like separated the like, you know what I mean? Like
the gloss, man.
Yeah.
The Hellraiser movies are so grimy.
Yeah. They're really
up, and, like wet.
At least the first two are, you know, by the time you get to three, things change, but
no, for sure. First two are just, you can feel the dirt on the floor.
You're like, I don't think this crew is treated very well. That's the kind of I get that vibe from those movies. You ever get that vibe? Like watching a movie, I don't think any of this is
no one's happy right now.
Yeah, I don't think anybody was happy working on this.
Their craft services has bugs in it for sure.
Just errant blood.
I love the idea.
Everywhere. Yeah.
I love the idea of a horror movie that, like, this is one thing I do love about a good horror movie is when it blindsides me with its original independence feel, you know, and Hellraiser. Is that it, like, I'd never seen it, and I had a roommate who is a full-blown Satanist, and he's like, we're gonna watch this movie, you're gonna love it, and I was like, yeah, and I watched it and I loved it. Like, I absolutely loved how simple and disturbing it was. But I came from like an evangelical home, so movies that are rooted in some form of like spiritual demon, like I had problems with that. I mean, I saw Poltergeist in the theaters when I was like 7. My mom took me and like had no business taking me to that movie. And then I saw like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I saw The Shining when I was in, you know, 8th grade. And these films like left an impact on me. Omen, holy shit. Mm-hmm. Omen just like completely just terrified me, because there's like this almost sort of Christian based supernatural, and I already got my parents telling me like the world's evil, and then they're over here and my mom's like, watch Poltergeist, and it's like a really twisted situation where we're in the middle of satanic panic. My mom's saying don't play, or you're not allowed to watch He-Man because it's evil. But we're watching Poltergeist and we're watching the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Like, it's this weird thing where it's like, things are evil, but I know about Poltergeist Eckenfurter is like, what? It's such a weird upbringing to have like the inundation of all these different, things that really oppose each other. So I grew up with watching and seeing a lot of that stuff, like the glass that comes out in Omen and chops a dude's head off. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my gosh, I can't do it.
Poltergeist was the first horror movie I saw, and I watched it. My parents rented it, and I watched it from behind the couch. No one knew. And it was my first, and I was stoked, and I was terrified. And then I remember waking up the next day and being like, oh, I'm fine. And I think the criminal aspect like kind of stuck with me. So I was like, horror rules.
you know, what's funny, Greg, is you and I have a similar upbringing in the sense that like I had on my parents' side, I had like, and they didn't want me necessarily to watch that stuff, but I still snuck it in. So like early on, I saw shit like The Exorcist. So I was exposed to like, mm-hmm. you know, horror pretty early. But then I would go over to my aunt and uncle's house, and they would be like, you can't watch the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie because it's satanic. And I was like, what is satanic about that? And they were like, well, they were sitting around in a circle and they resurrected Splinter's ghost, and that's satanic. I was like, the 6.5 foot tall talking fucking turtles isn't the one that did it. It's the fact that they meditated. Like, and so I had both of those sides of me going at the same time. And I was like, well, now I'm definitely going to watch more horror because this is weird. Like,
yeah, I think people forget about that time, you know, like I think even with as kind of ridiculous as things are now with how it's all morphed into QAnon and all that, you know, how the satanic panic has kind of shifted into just a different form of right wing.
Taylor Swift is the new Satan.
Yeah. Which I'm kind of into. Like, you know, there's worse Satans. But I had friends who weren't allowed to watch like Fantasia, when I was a kid, because like because Mickey Mouse did magic, and that was considered like satanic influence and stuff like that. I'm like, you people are out of your fucking minds. You know what I mean? Like, really? Like, this is like, and your parents are right. The world is evil. We just have to ask, who created all this evil? It's a good question. Sure.
That's why horror is fun.
Yeah, exactly. Where's the real evil coming from? Anyways, that's a different topic. Different podcast.
It's mostly white people.
Yeah, it's all white.
You guys want to talk about some indigenous rage? There you go. There's the target right there. The shitty ones.
It's like when people say, do you want your kids to go, like, when they're talking about trans people, they're like, do you want your kid to go into a bathroom with somebody who looks like that? I'm like, have you seen the shit that people that have looked like me have done? Like, you know what I mean? Like all the bad shit. Like, right now there's a dude like me, like, chasing his girlfriend down the street. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, there's like,
dude, when we went to Altercation Festival, I took an Uber back to my hotel. And we were in the Uber, and there was a dude that was in front of us that backed out of his parking space into a tree, and then was like, well, that was bad. So he decided to just drive away from it. And then his girlfriend got out of the truck. He got out of the truck too, was wearing no shirt, barely pants, and just like chasing her around the truck. And I was like, the Uber driver goes, should I get out and help? I was like, are you out of your fucking mind? I guarantee you both of them have a gun. Don't do that.
And that dude probably could have looked like my brother, right? Like,
yeah, 100%. Yeah, exactly. It's
just spitting image.
So
she also kind of could have looked like your brother.
Exactly. We're everywhere.
Good old Texas.
But yeah, so this has been really a lot of fun. Are you? Do you think you can handle our Sinister Six opinion questions?
I'm up for the challenge.
Okay. We say there's no right or wrong, but of course there is, because that's how opinions work. And so,
of course,
you know what I mean. Hey, Graham, you want to give it a shot?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right.
First one, Michael Myers or Leatherface?
Leatherface.
Yeah.
That's the right answer.
Number two, is Bigfoot real?
Yes.
Rad.
Oh, I love it. Number three, what movie would you remake?
It could be any movie.
Jeez. I don't know. Not Mean Girls.
Dude, fucking right. Like, that was a poor choice.
Can we come back to that? Let me think.
Yeah,
about
sure, yeah, sure. Yeah, that's a really good question. It's fine. In fact, this next one is passed on quite a bit. if you could erase one movie from existence, what would it be?
The Artist.
And it doesn't.
Nice. Right. Yeah. I love it.
I like it
immediately.
Yeah. Awesome.
No hesitation.
Perfect. Number five, Alien or Aliens?
Alien, first one.
Awesome. And last one, basement or attic?
Basement.
Nice.
Hell yeah.
Nice. I like basements.
Basements are terrifying.
Yeah, but like rad and terrifying. You know what I mean?
No,
like,
for sure. There's always like little furnaces and shit down there.
And like some treasure.
Listen, attics are for goon. These basements. I mean, come on.
Right. Exactly. Attics have like raccoons and shit.
Raccoons and goonies.
Did you want to take a stab at that remake?
Yeah, gosh. I don't know. I mean, no, I don't know. If I like a movie, I don't want to necessarily see it redone. You know what? I do have one. I have one. Repo Man. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see a new version of Repo Man. With that, you got to keep the punk inflection in there as well. Maybe even hit it more on the nose.
Yeah. I totally agree. And that soundtrack.
That's a great answer.
That soundtrack is still one of the greatest like punk comps of all time, like just of that era. Just like such a great, 100%. Great hot minute of and it's also my favorite movie to quote. There's not a Repo Man alive I know who doesn't use speed. Is one of my favorite. Are you a commie? No, I ain't no commie. Good, because I don't ride with commies. Christians either. Like anyway, I could sit here for an hour and quote Repo Man quotes. And then the big one, my friends and I used to just say,
I have a good story.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah.
So in the mid 90s, I was teaching snowboarding in Park City at Park City Mountain Resort. So the Sundance Film Festival rolls through, but about 2 weeks before the Sundance Film Festival came, Emilio Estevez was in town. And he had hooked up with one of our sort of chief, teachers to sort of see him around the mountain or whatever. And I edged my way in and ended up hanging out with Emilio Estevez. And It got to the point where, because I had a second job, it got to the point where I told him to go to my second job, which was a pizza place, and tell him that I sent you. Because my boss didn't believe that I had been hanging out with Emilio Estevez, who at the time was like coming off of, you know, Young Guns and all right. that good stuff.
Right.
And was sort of entering into that phase of his career where he's kind of quiet. You know, you're not hearing from him too much. But he did. He went to my work and he introduced himself to my boss. And my boss was just like freaking out and everything. But we're sitting on a chairlift together and we're riding up. And I said, so Repo Man. And he's like, what? Like, he's, are you even old enough to know what that movie is? And I'm like, dude, that movie is amazing. He's like, I haven't even thought about that movie in forever. I was like, no, I actually think it's your best movie. And he got really tickled about that. He thought that was funny. And he was talking about his brother too, but he didn't call him Charlie. He called him Carlos. And that always struck me too, like the family dynamic with the name and everything. He was just like, yeah, Carlos has problems. And you know, little did we know that he had major problems.
Right. Yeah.
He had many problems.
Still. All of them. Still. And shout out to Charlie Sheen. Hope you're getting better. But or Carlos Estevez. Yeah, I mean if anybody doesn't know, the reason, because Martin Sheen was not getting a job. Wasn't getting jobs because the second they would look at his, you know, they didn't like think he was like they, when they saw Spanish, they, you know, it's like the most like blatant racism ever. They just thought of like a Mexican person, which is of course not even bad in and of itself. So he just wasn't getting jobs. So he changed his name to like the most boring white dude name that he could come up with, which was like Martin mm-hmm. Sheen. And shout out to Emilio Estevez for being in tons of like, cause he's in a punk horror movie too, where what's that movie? Is it called Nightmares or something like that, where he plays the video game that possesses him?
Oh, fuck. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I don't know what the name is.
And that's got punk music in it too. And I think they were punk kids. I think that they were. And shout out to him for keeping it real and fucking and being Emilio Estevez, because Emilio Estevez, badass fucking name. I'll tell you.
It is.
Well, you
nothing
you...
more surreal than having teaching a lesson to a young kid. He left and he came back, and I'm standing in line, and he's in line, and he sees me, and he's waving, and he's like shouting and waving, Greg, and he's with some people, and the guy behind me goes, is that Emilio Estevez shouting for me? Like, I got to hang out with Emilio Estevez, and I had like that weird moment. But yeah, man, he's the real deal. That guy,
he seems rad. He really That's, does.
What a great, like, and good for you for like, I'm just going to go and I'll take this, guys. Don't worry. We got some shit to talk about, me and him.
I like it. And yes, it was, by the way, it was called Nightmares. Nightmares. And also we can't
forget.
Can't brush over the fact that Emilio Estevez was also in Maximum Overdrive.
Oh, so. Yeah, exactly. He's a, now I want Emilio Estevez on the show. It's not that I didn't before, but but now all this Emilio Estevez talk has made me.
He was on he was in Judgment Night, which is also incredible. By the way, is it not shocking that Charlie Sheen wasn't the one that was in Maximum Overdrive, given the fact that it was cocaine the movie? Like, that should have been Charlie.
Are you guys ready for some recommendations? Graham, you want to kick it off?
Yeah, I'll kick it off. Where did I put this? all right. First, I got I think it's pronounced Boudica or Boudica. They're Australian hardcore band, female singer, lead singer. They've got an album called Uncouth, and it's sort of it's got that almost like haunt but hardcore, if you will, like the new wave of British heavy metal kind of guitar, but like vicious hardcore. I really got into them because of the band name. If you guys don't know who Queen Boudica was, she was a British Iceni tribe, and she was her husband, the king, was promised was okay with the Roman Empire, like they were on good terms and stuff. And then he, upon his death, he's bequeathed his kingdom to his wife and his daughters. And then the Romans were like, "Nah, fuck that guy," and they raped his daughters and flogged his wife and stole all the land and everything. So she rallied up a bunch of British tribes and stuff and just killed like 80,000 Romans and just like tore vengeance through them until she was finally stopped. But like, she fucked some people up for a while because they fucked with her daughters, which fucking incredible name for a band. And they rip. So Boudica, Boudicca. Check that out. Cemetery Man finally hit Shudder. Yes. It's like my favorite zombie movie, I think. It's sexy and it's a romance story. And it's like Giallo and Hammer Films and Reanimator all together. And it stars Rupert Everett and it's Italian and it fucking rules. So please watch that. It's from 94, which is kind of surprising. It feels almost like a 90 or early or late 80s movie, but it's fucking great. I finally saw The Final Voyage of Demeter.
Oh yeah,
which was directed by Andres Almodóvar, who did the Autopsy of Jane Doe and Troll Hunter. I fucking loved it. It got trashed when it came out, but it was a fucking great Dracula it's on a boat wood. Movie. Yeah, like, that's what I was wanted, and it fucking nailed it. So, and my last one is Shade Bar in the Village. I'm not going to tell you where it is or when you should go, but I just found this place and they serve crepes. And two of the bartenders are heavily into horror. So now I have like 2 days a week where I go and have crepes and talk horror before I go to work. And it's fucking fabulous. Shade Bar, I'll tell you the name, but I'm not going to tell you the days to go. Because
I used to go right at that bar. That bar fucking rules.
It's so good.
Jonas.
Movie wise, I'm going to recommend a theater movie. Go see Lisa Frankenstein. It fucking ruled. Oh. It was actually really, really good.
Really want to see that.
Yeah, it's fucking awesome. Go see that. On streaming, I'm going to re-recommend a favorite of mine. I want to recommend. Oh, actually, you know what? I take that back. I'm not going to recommend this one because I think Ryan might also touch on this too. But I'm going to go to a musical one really quick. There's a band called called Ladronas or Ladrones. They have a song called Cloaca that fucking rules. They're a mariachi metal band, and I love it. It's like mariachi nu metal. And it's not something that I expected to like, and I absolutely fucking adore it. It's great.
Is their album called Flow Passado?
I don't even know what the album's called. I just know this song. And I listened to a bunch of the songs, but I haven't even seen what the actual album is called, come to think of it.
This is them.
Yeah, they fucking rule. And they remind me also, like, the vocalist reminds me of Cypress Hill. at times too, which is great. So I'm all about it. So they were great. Also on the physical media side of it, I'm going to recommend the Smile 4K Steelbook because it's actually a really, really good Steelbook. And the 4K transfer is really good. And then Scream Factory just did a 4K release Steelbook of Willy's Wonderland, which is also one of my favorite newer movies. In my opinion, the superior Five Nights at Freddy's movie.
Unrelated, I just got the Blu-rays of both those movies.
He did. He did, in fact, get the Blu-rays of both those movies.
Because Jonas got the Steelbooks.
That's what happens. I upgrade, you get my other ones. And then also, just a shout-out really quick to check out a new article that I'm doing on morbidlybeautiful.com. That is called Wild Eye Wednesdays. And it's every Wednesday I'm reviewing a Wild Eye releasing extreme horror film. And the first one that I did is the Spanish Chainsaw Massacre. That one's a good review. The next one that I'm doing is not a good review, and it's something that hurt Graham's feelings.
That's why you owed me. It didn't even hurt my feelings. You said it was super, super fucking gory and everything and all that.
It was that.
Brutal and mean-spirited. And it was, and it was gross. But, like, I fell asleep with 15 minutes left. Like, that's not a good sign. Like, you couldn't even catch, like, there was no story. I was like, all right, there's guts.
yeah.
There's definite penis all over the place.
Oh, yeah,
and
there is.
It's crazy. Yeah. and I fell asleep. I was so bummed.
It's one of those movies that has no storyline, and it's just gross to be gross. And then by the time you get to the end of it, you're like, Jesus Christ, of course you fucked that hole. All right. It's just like, okay. So yeah, that one's not going to be a good review. But the first one, like I said, Spanish Chainsaw Massacre, it is a good review because the movie's not a good movie, but it's a fun movie. So
that's all I need.
Yeah, that's all I got. Ryan, what do you got?
I'll hit these up really quick. I'm going to go old school. I watched Ice Cream Man again. If you haven't seen Ice Cream Man, Clint Howard is the best of the Howard people, and he is just absolutely incredible in Ice Cream Man, and it just wins every single time I watch it. I love Ice Cream Man. On Apple TV Plus or whatever the hell they call that station they have amazing story, like modern amazing stories that I didn't know that came out like in 2020. There's only five of them, but they were a lot of fun to watch if you're a fan of the old school amazing stories, any of the dark fantasy
hell
stuff.
Yeah.
The new ones were super fun and kind of fun to watch. I watched The Tourist on Netflix. That was fun and a good time filler. Is it amazing? Nah, but is it good to watch? Sure. I'm recommending it. I'm going to recommend Here for Blood, which is on Screenbox.
I wrote it.
Yeah, it is a Canadian movie, and it is a lot of fun, and they're very Canadian. And it has a ton of freaking fabulous gore and murders, and it also fits in with Graham's idea that movies about babysitters rule. So Here for Blood.
Sure, there's never been a bad one.
Yep. So watch Here for Blood. And lastly, music wise, I'm going to go late 80s New York hardcore, Killing Time, and Sick of It All. I've been listening to a lot of Sick of It All again. I've listened to Sick of It All my whole life. Sometimes I go on a Sick of It All deal, and Sick of It All and Killing Time to me are. Killing Time kind of sounds like a little bit of Crumbsuckers mixed with some Poison Idea, kind of, you know. I love it. So let's go check it out. Greg, what do you got for us?
Man, so much. Well, if you're not watching the fourth season of True Detective, you should watch it. The representation in that movie, in that series, is amazing, with an Afro-Indigenous lead in it. They did it right, and I love seeing the representation, but it is an eerie season, really eerie season, and I absolutely love it. I think I've been hearing Creep Show's having another sort of return, so shout out to all those old Creep Show movies I watched as a kid, just hoping to catch a glimpse of some nudity. That just is hilarious.
Yep.
We're big movie watchers in my house. So my oldest Sage, we have just been going through all kinds of movies. So if you haven't seen them in a while, might I suggest Swingers, Taxi Driver, Train Spotting, and I don't know, Platoon. Platoon's a good one. A new one that just came out, was just released on streaming, American Fiction. And it stars, what's his name, Jeffrey Wright. It's a racial movie, and it is hysterical. Like, I absolutely, it's brilliantly written, and really enjoyed it. And if you're looking for some tears from a weird place with a jacked Zac Efron Iron Claw, is actually worth watching too, I think. Let's see, there's actually a writer, film and that kind of thing. His name is Joey Clift. He is an indigenous writer. He's an enrolled Kalitz Indian tribal member. And he does these little shorts, and he has one short that I think is perfect for this podcast, where he addresses Stephen King's writing trope of always making it about an Indian burial ground or an ancient Indian curse or some bullshit like that. And he did this short piece on there that that is amazing. And it just talks about, it's like a dear Stephen, like, can we please stop doing that, you know, that trope. So please check that out. Music, I have just a couple. I'm kind of on Death from Above, 1979. They have this amazing song called Romantic Nights that I love. And then I'd like to point out a local band that I do not think is getting enough love. They are a Riot Girl band called Cheap Perfume. They're on Spotify. They have two records and a bunch of singles, and they kick ass. Exhibit one being that their first song on that you'll find on Spotify is titled It's Okay to Punch Nazis. Yes. So please check out Cheap Perfume. They're dope as hell.
Believe it or not, the first time I suggested you in this section, I suggested them as well. So they are absolutely fantastic. It's Okay to Punch Nazis. It's just like one of those beautiful anthems, and the rest of their stuff is also amazing. So yeah, I totally dig it. And up the women punk. It feels like it's long past due on that.
It's literally the only hardcore I'm listening to now besides Bruiserweight.
Right.
Also, Greg, if you haven't seen the movie Blood Quantum, that is...
Oh, yeah, I meant to say that. Yes.
Dude, I was going to say, that is one hell of a...
I actually... Yeah, I'm friends with Michael Grey Eyes, who's pretty much the lead in there.
Oh, shit.
It's a fantastic film. I really, really like that film.
Yeah, and shout out to that director. He passed away, which is just really sad. And Callie Reyes is her name, by the way, in True Detective, and she's fucking awesome in general. She's like, because she's the native lead in True Detective, and awesome, but she's also like a boxer in real life and like a bunch of shit. She's fucking cool as hell. Like, I'm like yeah, this season I've watched the whole season, and I was actually going to suggest it, and I kind of forgot about it. I watched the whole season yesterday morning, and yeah, like True Detective, like, keep them coming, you know what I mean? Keep them coming. And the final episode, if you, no spoilers, but if you haven't seen it, it's got some fist pumping moments, and I kind of like that, you know. Greg, you're awesome. Please keep doing what you're doing. Please keep coming back when you got a new album or anything like that. Come back and talk to us about it, and we'll think of some new horror movies to talk about during it. And thank you so much for everything that you're putting out right now and doing. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, man. Your guys' podcast is awesome, so I appreciate it. You're getting my mind thinking, I really like that. So, yeah, thanks for having me on, for sure.
Oh, cool. And thanks to everybody globally. America, you're still in first place. UK coming in hot on the second one. You've actually even gained a percentage point recently, which we love to do. Canada, you're in third. New Zealand solidly in fourth. Australia bumps Germany. Oh, big news. Australia bumps Germany. Germany, come on now. Like, you know what I mean? You let the Australians do it. That's big. That's big. Sweden, Turks and Caicos Islands moving up.
Turks and Caicos, man, hit us up. We want to do India, Mexico, Poland, Netherlands, France, Puerto Rico, Brazil, Spain, Czech Republic, Ireland, and Switzerland, and Taiwan, and the Philippines. Thank you all so much for listening globally. We do have a Patreon. If you go to AGHP666 at patreon.com. Graham, who is the army of the goddamn?
Son of a bitch. I got lost in your words.
We don't have.
It's Michael, Drew, Stephanie, Katie, Chris, Alan, Bacon Bits, Angela, Jasmine, Jason, Jake, Vivian, Ron Canop. Oh shoot, Ron, Kristen, Manny, Coleman, Ryan, Jared, Michelle, and Brandon.
We all really appreciate you. We have multiple tiers on our thing. We have everything from $1 a month all the way up to $20. And throw some money our way. Cause I want to buy shit, you know, cool shit.
We want to do cool shit for you.
You want to do cool shit.
We want to get Ryan out here so we can all go see a movie.
Yep. Exactly.
That's actually literally all we want to do. We just want to fly him out here so we can all go see a movie and then be like, all right, get the fuck, go back to Portland.
Hey, thank you all for thank you all for tuning in. If you are struggling, please reach out. We all do this together. We need each and every one of you, and love yourself and love your community. And until we see you next time, please go start some fires and break some glass. Thank you.